We head to Washington for our weekly look at the top headlines in national politics. Congress is on recess, but that hasn't stopped lawmakers from continuing to negotiate a bill that would modify the NSA's authority to collect bulk phone data. That provision of the Patriot Act expires this Monday, June 1st.
And yesterday, a federal appeals court panel denied a White House request to move forward with the president's plan to grant work permits and quasi-legal status to millions of undocumented immigrants.
Here with us now to talk about all that and more is Francesca Chambers, White House correspondent for the Daily Mail. Francesca, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me again.
So what does Congress have to work through between now and this coming Monday on the Patriot Act before parts of it pertaining to NSA surveillance expire?
Well, first of all, the Senate has to pass any legislation dealing with it at all if they do not want it to expire, as you just said. In a marathon session that ran into Saturday morning even, they couldn't come to an agreement on this issue and eventually left town for their holiday, even though it will expire on Sunday without passing any legislation. So there's several different roads and paths that they could take to get it passed, but they have to do something.
Now, the president has been urging Congress to get cracking on this, as you said, that they recess, though. But what parts of the Patriot Act is he most concerned about expiring?
Well, the most important one is Section 215, which is where the NSA derives its power in order to look at bulk telephone records of Americans. Now, what they do when they look at these records isn't so much have a name attached to it and go through your personal data. What happens is all this information is fed into a system, and then they look at phone numbers associated with known terrorists and run those through the system as well. And so if someone has been in contact with a terrorist, they'll know. And currently, that will expire, that authority, on Sunday at midnight. Now, the interesting thing about that, though, is that a federal court recently ruled that Section 215 of the Patriot Act doesn't even give the NSA the authority to run that program. So it's debatable that even if this section expires, that the administration wouldn't still run the program. But the White House refused to comment on that yesterday.
Well, is Congress looking at modifications to it then, maybe taking it out of government hands?
That's exactly what the Congress is looking to do. The House has already passed legislation that would essentially do just that. It's called the USA Freedom Act. And what it would do is it would put that power back in the hands of the telephone companies, and the NSA would have to get a warrant from a secret court in order to search through that data when it needs to. However, that legislation has stalled in the Senate. The Senate is 3 votes short of overcoming a procedural hurdle that would allow that legislation to formally come up for a vote. So if senators who support the bill are able to turn 3 of their colleagues in favor of just voting, you know, to let it to move forward, not necessarily even voting for the legislation itself in the end, then this will all be resolved on Sunday afternoon.
Now, how likely does that seem to you?
I think it's possible. There, again, are several senators who may be more in favor of having, you know, the same Patriot Act Section 215 reauthorized. However, they may come to the conclusion that they're not going to be able to get that passed, and their best bet to allow the NSA to continue to have these tools legally would be to pass the USA Freedom Act. But it's really tough to say because the Senate's in recess right now.
And so what happens come Monday if there's not an agreement?
Well, the White House has said that the NSA and the Justice Department are already starting currently to wind down those programs in order to come in compliance by midnight on May 31st. So you're already, you know, seeing the effects of what will be happening. It won't just all of a sudden switch off on Sunday.
Now, moving on to the president's immigration plan, a federal appeals court panel ruled that the Obama administration could not proceed with their immigration plan while it's being challenged in court. Unpack that for us a little. What does that ruling mean?
Well, more or less, it just stops the president from being able, and the Department of Homeland Security, from being able to move forward with the program, as you just said. So it's not a ruling that says what the president did with his executive order, saying that illegal immigrants, that children who came here, you know, as illegal immigrants, they can't stay. That's unconstitutional what he did. What the court said was that he can't move forward with those plans to not deport those certain people until a final court ruling has been made. So this could potentially not be resolved all the way until the Supreme Court and possibly beyond President Obama's administration.
And looking at the big picture issues here, Republicans saying that Obama has overstepped his prosecutorial discretion. What is their case on that?
Well, essentially, they're saying that the president does not have the authority in order to issue sweeping mandates like the one that he did that said that millions of children who came here, you know, were illegal immigrants when they came here, are able to stay. At the same time, the White House is saying that he is absolutely able to do that, because it's not just that he's saying that they can't be deported. It's not that he's giving them amnesty. He's specifically saying that you should deport first all sorts of other classes of illegal immigrants, and most importantly, criminals. And if the federal government focused on deporting the criminals first, as well as all the other illegal immigrants, you know, roughly 6 million other illegal immigrants, they would never get to the class of illegal immigrants, the so-called dreamers, that his executive order and mandate applies to.
What kind of reaction have immigration reform advocates had to this ruling today?
Well, I think that they're in a little bit of denial about this. They're saying that, you know, this isn't a big deal, that the ruling wasn't based on the merits. You know, all that they said was that Texas and the other states have standing to sue the administration. However, it is a big blow, because even to say that the states have standing to sue the administration, you know, says that they do have some sort of a legitimate argument to sue the president. So that could give a look into what will finally happen. Every single court that this has come through so far, this specific case, you know, has essentially ruled the same way.
Now, this ruling from the appeals court was largely technical. When does it look like the actual substance of the immigration case will go before a higher court?
Well, it depends on how the Obama administration decides to play it. They could, you know, take it through another lower-level court, so to speak, or they could challenge all the way up to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court could choose to take up such legislation as early as their next term next fall, you know, and that wouldn't, however, be heard until the spring, and that wouldn't be decided until the summer, which is why I said that this could potentially take up almost the rest of the president's administration.
We're talking right now to Francesca Chambers, White House correspondent at the Daily Mail, about the latest in national politics. And moving on to the 2016 presidential race, Rick Santorum announced today that he's running for president again this time around. And we haven't heard that much about him so far. Is he being seen as a serious contender?
Well, I think it's hard to hear about many of the 16 Republicans running, because there are just so many of them. We've counted at the Daily Mail 16 that will probably jump into the race. So I'd be surprised if most of your listeners had heard very much about anyone beyond, you know, Scott Walker from Wisconsin or some of the other bigger names that are expected to jump into the race. You know, Rick Santorum, I think the key things to know about him is he's very, very conservative. He's a former U.S. senator and a member of Congress who lost his 2006 bid for re-election. Since then, he's written a couple books. He started a political action group, and he ran for president in 2012. He was the runner-up in that race to Mitt Romney, falling short in the end. And since then, you know, he's basically spent his time, like I said, traveling the country, promoting his books, and spending a lot of time in early presidential states. However, even though he's had theoretically the most time, since, you know, he's not a full-time politician anymore, to have been launching his bid, he's still way down low in the polls. And part of the reason, again, I think that is because it's such a crowded field.
Now, he's being seen as someone who's looking to court so-called lunchbox voters or lunchbox Republicans. What do we know about what his platform might be?
Well, first of all, he's going to call for, you know, a revival of manufacturing. Today, his kickoff campaign will be held at a manufacturing factory in Pennsylvania. He's all about, you know, the blue-collar workers, but he is also very, very, very pro-life. And so you'll be hearing him talk about traditional marriage. He is very against abortion. I think you'll hear just as much about the social issues from someone like Rick Santorum as you're going to hear about the economic issues. But the question is, do you agree with his stances on those social issues?
As you were just talking about the Republican pool, it just keeps getting bigger and bigger. Is it unusual to see this many candidates in a race, especially this early?
I feel that this is unusual. I wouldn't say this early. You know, I think that there's a lot of years, even if you look back to 2012, there were a lot more candidates who ended up dropping out before we ever got to Iowa, even in January of 2012. But I will say that this is still an unusually large field. I think that the first Republican debate will help to weed out some of these candidates. Only 10 will be allowed on the stage. And anyone who's not in that first debate will have a very difficult time getting attention, I think, in some of these early states, as well as nationally, if they're not on that stage. And even the second debate, only the top competitors will be on the stage the first hour. It's only the second hour that everyone would be on the stage. And that gives them very little time to make a splash and really get their name out there. So I definitely say that in August, the first debate, in September, the second debate, you'll probably see some people dropping like flies.
Who's looking particularly vulnerable to you?
Well, Rick Santorum, for one. The way that the rules currently stand, he wouldn't make it into the debate if Donald Trump were to also run. He would really need to knock off Rick Perry as one. Rick Perry is right in front of him as well to get into that debate. Or potentially have another candidate who's polling slightly higher, say a Chris Christie, who's double him in the polls, but double isn't that big of a deal when, let's say, Rick Santorum is, 2.5% and Chris Christie is, 5.5%. He could still make that jump up once he announces his candidacy. He might get a bump even, you might see in the next couple of weeks. But still, it will be very difficult, I think, for Rick Santorum and some of these other candidates at the bottom to be able to get into that debate at this point.
Some interesting conversations, interesting statements going on the trail. Rand Paul seems like he's stirring up the mud puddle. He said this morning that it was Republican hawks like John McCain and Lindsey Graham who are responsible for the creation and growth of ISIS. What do you make of a statement like that?
One way that Rand Paul is separating himself from the rest of the field is that he has a very different view on foreign policy than some of the other candidates who are running. Now, in most of those statements, he doesn't specifically say who he's talking about, but anyone who's a close observer of politics knows that he's talking about 2008 Republican nominee John McCain, who's chairman of the Armed Services Committee in the Senate, and is a close ally of Lindsey Graham, also on the Senate Armed Services Committee. Now, Lindsey Graham is also expected to enter the presidential race within the next week. So Paul is really positioning himself against those sorts of people in the race, and not just Lindsey Graham, Jeb Bush, Marco Rubio. There are several of them that I would say are on the other end of the spectrum when it comes to military intervention. And Paul is just really trying to make it sharply clear, how he would be different than everybody else who's running.
And just briefly as we wrap up, Francesca, how important are these foreign policy questions going to be in 2016?
Not every year is a foreign policy election. In 2008, that wasn't a foreign policy year, and John McCain was a foreign policy candidate and ended up being an economic year, which helped Barack Obama clinch the general election. But this year, foreign policy could play a huge role as the fight against ISIS continues, as the agreement with Iran goes on. There are several huge foreign policy issues that I think will continue to take center stage, not just this year, but through the 2016 election itself.
Francesca, thanks a lot for talking today.
Thank you again for having me. It's always a pleasure.
That was Francesca Chambers, White House correspondent at the Daily Mail, talking with her about the latest in national politics.